Welcome to the Hellbound Alley program. I'm Allie, and with me as always is Frank.
Yes.
And before we get started, we do have a special guest today. Frank, why don't you introduce him?
Why me?
Because you remember his name.
Do I get introductory duty?
Yes.
No, our guest is Joe Holman, who is a ex-minister and who has a website at ministerturnsatheist.org. Hello, Joseph.
How are you?
Oh, we're fine. We're great.
I appreciate you having me on.
No problem. We really have a nice temperature today, by the way. It's really sunny.
It's beautiful. Last day before Jesus dragged his corpse out of this tomb.
Exactly.
Meaning that it's the day before Easter.
Yeah, we have a day of rest today because God is dead right now. Because
Jesus is down in paradise, unlocking the iron gates.
He was in hell.
I know, but he's down there, unlocking the iron gates of Hades, letting Moses and Noah out.
Yeah.
Because they live in paradise, which is a little paradise that's surrounded by Hades.
So it's kind of like a suburb of hell, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like kind of in the middle, and Jesus has this special skeleton key. And he manages to open these iron gates, and I'm talking about some apocryphal writing. They don't like to talk about that part too much, but...
Fascinating. Tell me more.
but regardless of the Bible, because we've gotten enough of the Bible in the last couple of days around here, and
by the way, before we continue, I also have to mention that tomorrow is Joe's birthday, is that right?
It is. It dawned on me a day or so ago, and then I realized it again today, and so it sure is, and time's flying away.
So what do you think that your birthday this year is falling right on Easter?
Well, I really don't like the theological implications. But
well, of course, his birthday also coincides with tax day.
Yes.
Also, that also has very dubious connotations.
Well, because obviously tax day just can't be today because the government's asleep. But
I'll tell you this: that I have, being that my dad's a chief accountant, I didn't have to worry about that. So I do have that all squared away, and now we.
There you go.
But you know, this is like the only time in Quebec that we have to deal with Christianity much. Out there in the world, is Christianity wakes up for about 3 days every year, and there's some young guys carrying crosses around, and they're selling hot cross buns in the stores. And
really quite an outrageous display.
But all the French stations... That was funny. The French stations yesterday were running two passion stories almost, and the action was happening at almost the exact same time. Two different Jesuses,
Jesus.
So we're watching the crucifixion.
I need the proper plural.
We're watching Jesus. The crucifixion, and they have this music, this stately sort of violin music, and there's this beautiful woman playing. Martha or Mary or whoever, played by the little girl Olivia Hussey, who played Juliet in the famous Romeo and Juliet in the 70s. And then I switch over to the next French station, and there's a different Jesus, but this one isn't being bothered by Ernest Borgnine like in the other story. And this one had a slightly thinner Martha and a much, much older St. Anne, and this was a more craggy Jesus. The first Jesus was like the very thin and very mournful Jesus, and the second Jesus was kind of muscular. He looked like he could kick some ass. But the second one had much more evil Jews in it. But luckily, we didn't have to watch the Passion of the Christ.
Well, you know what I do? I like to go. I eat a lot of these Mexican places down here in the South, and I go in the restaurants and notice the crucifixes on the wall where they have a dead man with blood on him in a restaurant sprawled out on the wall.
In a restaurant.
Yeah, in the Mexican restaurants, and on top of that, on Easter they dignify the carved corpse with a bunch of flowers, and I always voice my disgust at that. One, it's a dead man in a restaurant, which just doesn't go very well together. And two, it is altogether ridiculous, like so many dying and rising savior gods of ages before. So
they just have this guilt complex about touching it and taking it down, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, there's a sanctification involved. You get closer by seeing it and remembering it. It's just, that's the way the occult mind works.
So, the next item of business is, since atheists are so busy these days declaring war on things, I've started my own
war.
We have declared war on moral relativism.
Let loose the dogs of war.
And it is being waged in blogs around the internet, but it started in mine, and it's at hellboundalley.blogspot.com, and you can see me taunting you, because I know you guys listening to us, the drooling little monkeys that you are, I know that most of you are relativists, so if you want me to ridicule you, you can come and see it happen, where I will be slapping wrists.
Well, we have just started. We only have 2 entries right now, but we have just gotten started.
We're getting fellow generals and foot soldiers. And
do not think that this is a one-shot thing. We're in for the long haul.
We're in to save the souls of atheists everywhere. We want to save your moral integrity. We want to help you become more honest people with your own decisions in life, because we know that you guys out there, we know that you try to be good people and you try to make the best decisions possible. And when you make those decisions about your life, we know most of you take into account actual facts of the universe, because after all, there is nothing else but the actual facts of the universe. We know that you do take into account as much as you can when you make big decisions or little decisions and how you live your lives. I know most of you are very earnest. I know most of you are very good people. And you're going to see a lot said in my blog. And before you rush in, one of the biggest fears of a lot of you seems to be that you're worried that we might be fascists. And let me assure you, we are definitely not fascists. So before you go in and fight against, realize that we are not trying to take over the world. We want to help you be more morally autonomous.
Since I'm an anarchist, I'm not sure how that's supposed to work there.
Exactly. Someone doesn't believe in the state, you don't have to worry about any threats of us trying to impose any fascism on you.
Exactly. It's the state that does that. We're not here to impose.
But there is one thing, folks, that I want you to remember, and because most of you are atheists, you also know that you really can't do very much to escape something called the world. And, you know, and I know that you're all fans of science and reason, and you know that
world... I think there are a lot of atheists who say they are. But
who say they are. But if you are, if you really are, you can't make special pleading for things about the decisions you make in your everyday life. That's not special or different. It's not in a special or different category from everything else, and we're going to try to help you come to terms with that. And that's all I'm going to say about it for now. You can, If you're interested to find out more, you can come to my blog.
So if you're a blogger and you want to help us, just go ahead and check Elbon Alley's opening post. And we have a blog roll, so if you post an entry on this topic, that's related to this topic, just go ahead and tell Allie, and she'll add it toward the blog roll. She'll put a link to you and your post.
Yes, you can contact me at allie@hellboundalley.com, or you can make a comment in the Declaration of War post at hellboundalley.blogspot.com. That post will be up at the top until May 1st, or in case I need to extend it, it'll be up there on top for a long time.
No.
And if you're interested in our other stuff, if you want to find out where we do stand, you can, that instead of having to read what we have to say, you can go to our website at hellboundalley.com and listen to our shows.
Now, there have been some comments made about our show on abortion. And a person especially has commented that, who's that? I don't know what his name is. Someone said that at the end of the show that I got mad and started an emotional attack because I didn't have a logical answer to the question. I think there's a little confusion here because, first of all, I did not attack Raving Atheist over a question. I attacked him because of his extremely retarded argument that, if you remember correctly, he stated that parenthood, having a toddler, was slavery, and that therefore there was no difference between the state of a mother, feeding her a fetus through her body, and a mother being a slave to a toddler. And that's, if you really believe that, you're an idiot. I'm not going to, not a logical, it's not an argument to reply to. It's just, I jumped on him because I saw that we had won the debate at that moment, and there wasn't much time left to the show. So no, I wasn't flustered, if that's what you think. If you think that this reasoning could fluster anyone, you're an idiot. I'm sorry. And, so I wanted to reply to that. And the other thing is, the 50-Minute Hour, which is a great blog, had a good little argument, which I wanted to say about abortion, which said that the anti-abortion people who say that abortion is permissible in cases of rape, well, that means that any teenager should get as many abortions as they want, because technically... Well, actually, not really, but...
legally.
If they have sex with a man above a certain age, that's great.
Actually, in some states,
according
it doesn't
to the
matter.
Law.
In some states, even if he's underage.
So that, means that they should be able to get as many abortions as they want. And so if that's just a little inconsistency there, because I'm sure most of them would say that it's terrible, and that... they should not be able to get abortions in the end.
Well, that's why the representative out in South Dakota said
that.
Oh,
not
that.
Yeah.
That,
no, we'll
and I
that.
Did make a remix
no, don't
of
give
it.
Him any, no, don't even mention that.
I made
don't,
a, re-
don't
a remix
credit
of
that.
It on the station, and that's playing on Free Thought Media and Free Thought Radio now and then. You can hear exactly what that a rape constitutes in the eyes of...
Yeah.
South Dakota representatives.
We shouldn't even give any credence to that. I mean,
well, that's why I made fun of it.
I know. You just to make fun of it. Yeah.
But see, lately I've been listening to people like Sam Harris and Brian Fleming and making really good arguments for making fun of as much as possible those positions. And I'm all for it.
Definitely. So why don't you give... the good listeners are for you.
Well, I did it just a second ago when I was talking about the blog attack. But again, the email address is allie@hellboundalley.com, and the site is hellboundalley.com. And Allie, as always, is spelled A-double-L-triple-E. I should go back and find Penn Jillette's spelling my name. I'll make a little recording and play that back.
So we have with us Joe Holman today, and we're going to talk about why he's an atheist. So Joe, you're an ex-minister. What was your involvement as a minister in the, I understand you were in the Church of Christ, correct?
Yes, the mainline Churches of Christ.
So why don't you talk to us a little bit? I know this isn't really the topic, but why don't you just maybe give us some introduction to your involvement in religion and maybe how you, a little bit about the process that led you out of that situation as a minister.
Sure. Sure. Well, it began in about 93, when that was the first time in my life I'd actually started I'd been out of high school and I was longing for answers. It was the first time in my life I became interested in philosophy and particularly religion through the loss of a relation, the failure of a relationship with a girl I was in, and that kind of sparked me toward seeking out, religious truth. And my mother and I began attending a church that is very close to the house here in San Antonio. And before you know it, I was involved with the youth group there, and I was baptized there, and decided that it was time to give my life to the Lord. And I did that, and got right into it strongly. But then after I was in the church as an active member for about 9 months, I said, hey, it really doesn't make sense to go halfway. The Lord died for me, so I need to give it all for Him. So I decided to go into the ministry. I decided to make it my life's work. And lo and behold, I raised my support. The churches came through for me. And I was on my way within a year to seminary school, where I would spend 2 long years as a minister in training. And then from there, straight into the field. I preached at 4 different churches and before my resignation in September of 2003, and I learned quite a bit. And matter of fact, those years shaped my life in ways that it's kind of hard to explain. I've always had doubts because I guess I've always been enough of a rationalist at heart to appreciate logic, appreciate reason. I remember having my first battles with doubt shortly after becoming a Christian, probably 6 months or so later, where I would start to face issues about what if the Bible is not what it says, what if my religion is not true, which religion is the right religion. And I started to have different doubts. Of course, they weren't serious. I studied them away. Pretty soon I faced several atheists in the discussions, and I was a little bothered because it was a lot harder to discuss with them. Well, as a result of that, I would go and get apologetics books and I would keep learning more and more of what I thought was good answers to their arguments. But I would argue with everybody. I would talk to Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, Baptists, you name it. Any religion outside of the Church of Christ was principally not correct. And I really believed that for a while. I really believed that I had the one true church and the one true understanding of the universe. I mean, I believed in hook, line, and sinker. And so I continued to learn until I went to seminary school, where they stepped it up a little, where I learned a lot on argument and debate and hermeneutics and the science of interpreting and expounding upon the scriptures. So it grew, and it was a very big process. It grew, and you know, before you knew it, I was a minister and had my own life preaching and teaching to others, and I loved it. I truly loved it. I truly believed it. For those people who email me all the time and ask me, did you really believe it? Were you really saved? And all that. Yes, I truly was. I was as firmly convicted as a person could be. And I pursued that walk of life with all honesty, with all integrity. But as the years went by, I noticed that a lot less of my time was spent evangelizing, and more of my time was spent having to explain away the Bible difficulties I was finding. And this is where your memory, my memory, acted as a sort of log, and it wrote down all the details, the things I had problems with. For instance, I would study in the Scriptures and find out that a lot of places in the Gospels they imply that the disciples thought Jesus was coming back in their own lifetimes. this. And of course that's true. But I wouldn't admit that at the time. But my mind sort of kept a log of it, and I kept issues, philosophical issues, but mostly biblical issues early on. And the more I studied the Bible, I found that more and more problems it presented. It didn't solve anything. All it did was present more questions to be explained. For instance, why God allowed the slaughter of the Midianites in Numbers 31. You know, why multiple passages are not only inhumane, but just brutal on levels that it's hard to comprehend. I kept having to explain those away, and pretty soon my preaching work, by the time the last few years of my ministry, were filled with apologetics. I kept having to explain away how to harmonize passage A with passage B. I kept having to go here and go there. I kept having to explain what the Bible meant when it talked about cud-chewing bunnies. And what I was doing was repatching and rewriting the Bible. And I didn't realize that until the end of my ministry, when I realized, look, what if, and it, I remember the doubting years where I had to entertain that perhaps the atheists were right. Perhaps the free thinkers and higher criticism was right. Perhaps I am looking at contradictions, but I refuse to see them. Because in my explanations, I would always rely on a certain group of thinkers, the fundamentalist apologists for my answers.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, in my mind, there could be no contradiction in the Bible because the Bible was the inspired word of God, and it's impossible to be wrong. And so, therefore, the more I studied it, my knowledge pool remained shallow. But as I begin to doubt and expand my mind and study other things, I realized, hey, there's a bigger world out there. And perhaps the Bible's not as sound, not as true as I once believed it to be. And so, finally, the doubt process started. I really began to doubt the Bible because the more I studied, I could never get away from the work I was having to do to patch it up. I was always dealing with some problem, some discrepancy. And before you knew it, I was in full-fledged doubt. I went to the local nursing home in the ministry, and where I was, and I saw these people that were dying. I saw the churches, including the church I was at, getting smaller. Why were we getting smaller? Because we stayed with hardline Christianity. We stayed with fundamentalism. We weren't part of the contemporary movement that tried to win people over with social gimmicks and things of that nature. We stayed strong to the Bible, and I realized how that was such a dying, we were a dying breed. And as our churches got smaller, as the sick got more, despite our prayers, I started to really think. I started to really question for the first time in my life, look, this really may not be true. And once I began the critical thinking process, it snowballed. And before you know it, you keep looking for that right tract or email or book to come along, and you think, hey, you know, I'll pray for wisdom, and God will give me wisdom. God is testing me. I'm gonna get strengthened from all this. Well, that never happens. You think you're gonna solve the problem, but the problem is never solved. And so, pretty soon, you start to have to re-identify with a new you, and that's when the difficulty of deconversion, that's the heart of it. Because you find that you have to become another person. You have to actually re-identify with life. The Christian soldier Job died. And let me tell you, it was a painful death because every time I looked around my world, I was so used to thinking in a glorified spiritual context, a glorified biblical context. I had to re-identify and realize that that was not the real life. That was not the way things were. And all that I had been taught about creation and design and all of that was not only not true, it was grossly inaccurate, and it was dishonest. And so I'm crudely summarizing here. Those are the highlights. Those are the highlights of the deconversion process.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of things to talk about in what you said.
There sure is.
One of the things that was interesting was you said that you still had doubts up to a certain point, but you decided to give your life to Jesus.
Right.
What were your thoughts? Didn't you have any doubts on that aspect?
Well, no. At that early point, when I first became a believer, I was not faced with doubts then. I was just, you know, a searching person. But shortly after my conversion, as I matured and as my mind began to, you know, read other things, then the doubts began to surface. But I was still, they were nowhere near serious. They were just thoughts, and it spurred more curiosity. Part of what drives a fundamentalist religionist is the fact that they don't know it, but they're thriving on controversy. They're taking the disagreements of everyone else, and they're exalting their own position and explaining why it's better than everyone else's. And so, they're capitalizing on their belief. And that's what I did. I believed it, and I built upon that foundation with every evidence book I could find. I studied and studied and studied. And at first, everything made sense. But very quickly, that began to go downhill.
I understand. And it just snowballed from there. I mean, if you have one cognitive dissonance,
exactly,
you're kind of creating two others to try to explain that one, and so on.
Exactly. Right. And so it becomes a problem you cannot, if you're honest, you cannot solve. You can choose like so many ministers do. And that's one question I get. Why, Joe? Why do other preachers not apostatize? And here you go, leaving. Well, I mean, a lot of preachers, and I've talked to many of them about atheism, have said, look, I know that there are issues the Bible can't explain, but I really don't care. I'm just going to move away from that. If I thought like that, I'd still be a preacher today. But I wasn't willing to do that. I wasn't able to do that. I can't let go of something that doesn't fundamentally make sense or can't be put in a logical context. I can't do it. And that's the difference. That's what separates the thinkers from the non-thinkers. It's not religion. It's the fact that some people are not critical thinkers. And I happen to be one, and therefore took the path of life I took.
Exactly. All right. Well, I think we should get started on our topic. Oh, Bob, and by the way, I wanted to mention to you, while I was Googling you, I found another guy called Joel Holman who calls himself a pompous
Oh, you're talking
windbag.
Yeah, you're talking
about him?
Yes, I do. Very often they confuse us. I don't know who he is. He's just some guy who likes to talk a lot. He is on the Google search, I've noticed. Joe Holman's shameless self-promotion is what the search used to be titled. But, people have told me that, so I've noticed it, so.
Looks like
he's
into rodeos.
What a wild and crazy guy. Anyway.
Yeah, it seems like it. I really don't know much about him, but he seems like a very, very social guy.
So we're going to talk about why you're an atheist. Well, I'm afraid we don't really have that much time before the intermission. Perhaps we should go right away to the intermission, and then we can get a fresh start here. So why don't you go ahead and tell us what the intermission is all about?
Okay, well, this is very exciting, folks, because you may have heard about the newly released Gospel of Judas, which may give some people pause about what Christians believed in the early church. And you may also have heard about the war on Easter. And you may have also heard that Easter has its origins not in Christianity, but in earlier religions, a lot of early German religions with pagan goddesses such as Ostara and her familiar fertility hair god, which is the rabbit. Well, I have discovered a new gospel.
Indeed.
That may shed some new light on the real origins of Easter bunnies and colored eggs and other kinds of Easter goodness. And I want to give you all a little taste of this new gospel. And I've made a recording of it, so you can hear it now.
All right, sounds great. And we'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
We are sometimes told that Jesus' words represent the summit of morality. For your edification and enjoyment, we now present some words or actions of Jesus as presented in the Gospels.
The Book of Peter, Cottontail, and the rabbit, which chewest the cud, didst lay down its egg of many colors, when the Lord did come upon him, and he was sore afraid. Fear not, sayest the Lord, for I bring unto thee a lesson which shall be glorious unto the nations. And the bunny of Easter lay down its ears, and did twitch its whiskers, and the Lord began, again, like he is wont to do, because the Lord so liketh to talk, and in such a glorious manner. And the brightest and stripiest of eggs are those which are the hardest to find, but those who find reap the least reward, and those who do not find find the greatest, and those who find the least receivest the chocolate, and those who find the most receivest none. When thou dost find the chocolate idol, eat not first of the tail, for thou wilt be likened to a sodomite. But eatest thou of the ears, and thou wilt be normal, and therefore pleasing in God's sight. But if thou wilt breakest off a piece, and givest unto me, for thine will be the kingdom of heaven. Lo, for yonder grows the mighty forsythia bush, that shinest a most glorious yellow, like the sun. For there, look, for there emergeth the crystalline marshmallow peep, tempting all with its sugary goodness. Take not the peep, but takest it to the people. For him that does not take the peep to the people shall be poked with the pike, and shall burn as the barest branches of the briar bush. So saith the Lord. Then the master did go on his way, no doubt to harass a muskrat, thought the rabbit. The bunny didst cover his heels, lay his chocolate eggs, and hopped his way down the bunny trail. Amen.
We hope that this passage helped you grasp more of Jesus' intellectual and moral contributions to mankind. For more information, please visit our ministries at graveyardofthegods.org.
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
There you go.
So in all you pagans, you don't own Easter anymore.
The sacred scriptures have spoken. And by the way, so we're talking about this during the intermission, but I forgot to mention this, but this is our 100th show.
Throwing confetti, woo!
Continue.
Yay!
Yeah, definitely. We've been doing this for 2 years.
Yeah, two years now, because when we started, it was around Easter.
Yeah.
Just after Easter when I gave my testimonial. It was a clunky little show, but we got comfortable.
We've grown.
We've added quite a bit of stuff.
Yeah. I think in terms of quality, I think our show is really a lot better. I think we have great guests.
We've made a lot of friends.
Such as the one we have today.
Yeah.
But no, I think we really, this show is really doing great, and we have had a lot of new features throughout these 2 years. I mean, we have the live show, we have Vox Populi, we have our Answers with Helma and Ellie, the Jesus Verses, the Diaries. I mean, we have just, we've done a lot of things in those 2 years.
So yeah, we've had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, so far it's been a lot of fun, and I think it's going to keep being fun.
And thanks for being a part of it, everyone. And we'll keep on going.
Yeah.
Well, I'm honored to be. I'll say again, guys, I'm honored to be here. I enjoyed y'all's shows. Probably a few months ago, got to go back through and listen to y'all's archive shows, and
cool.
I enjoy it. Definitely. They are good, well topicalized, I must say.
Why, thank you. Definitely. And so we're talking with our 100th show guest, Joe, and Joe Holman, ex-minister. And, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, you have a book, too, isn't that correct?
That's right. The Bible's X-Files, What Your Church Doesn't Want You to Know, should be released within the year. And, you know, I have advertised it before, but I've still got some headway to go, but I'm mostly through with it. It's just in the editing phases now, and I'm going to add maybe one or two chapters here and there, and then work on the mechanics of getting it published. So stay tuned. And
yeah, from what we talked about yesterday, it sounds like it's just chock full of
yes, it will be.
Stuff, and,
I'm trying to compile it into a readable format. It is going to be a lot of material. So far, I have all about 400 plus pages, so I've got to you know condense a little.
Now you say let's get on the reasons why you're an atheist. And
okay.
You've got on your site you have 8 reasons, and the first reason is I'm an atheist because the God believer has the burden of proof when trying to establish the existence of a God and has not met that burden. That's
exactly.
That's a very good point. I think we don't emphasize that enough.
That's exactly true.
I think
people.
Sorry,
people have no. I'm sorry. People sometimes have it when a person makes a fantastic claim, people see it as though they have to disprove it, which is not the case.
Exactly.
The same thing with God belief is the same thing with leprechauns and unicorns and whatever else of a mythical nature. I am under no obligation to believe a claim that has not been demonstrated in some way to be true. Of course, exempted from that are things of the material realm, which are things we take for granted. We realize, you know, we don't doubt that the UPS exists. We don't doubt that the post office exists. We, you know, those are things that are reasonably arrived at. If you tell me a story about going to the store and having certain things happen, I'll probably believe you. But if you come back and tell me that you saw Elvis, well, I'm going to have some issues with you because that's a fantastic claim, and I'm under obligation to treat fantastic claims differently as I treat others. You have to have that, not to be cynical, but to be realistic, because otherwise you lose the ability to distinguish between true and false claims.
Mm-hmm.
The distinction between myth and fact is totally blurred then. So I have to have a high standard of proof. And the God belief is precisely that issue. That's exactly what we don't have proof for. That's exactly what we can't see. We can't verify. In fact, we're nowhere close to even pointing in that direction, which is the problem for the theist.
Yeah, I think in terms of basic claims, I would say that they do have a burden of proof, but it's much easier for a materialist claim to meet that burden of proof than a supernaturalist claim or an extraordinary claim of those types. For example, if you say, you know, like you said, I went to the grocery store and whatever, I don't have any reason to not believe you. You don't have any motive to lie to me, per se. So
right.
I don't, you see, it's kind of, you know, yeah, I trust you, so I don't really have any reason to argue against that. But
right.
if someone goes around and says that, you know, he went to a park and then he saw a guy bathed in light rocketing into the sky, you would go, yeah, did you take your pills today? So I definitely there's a huge difference in the burden of proof.
Definitely.
Between, saying there's no God, even saying there's no God, per se, you can see it simply as a reaffirmation of materialism.
Right.
I don't understand what it means to say there's no God, because all I know is the material universe.
Exactly. There's no... We start out here, and exactly. All we know is here. And so I have no experience with a being of the nature of myth,
exactly.
Particularly the Christian myth. So.
Exactly. How do you get from here to there? It doesn't... There's a fundamental disconnect there.
Even defining what that being is presents insurmountable problems.
Exactly.
To
yes,
the God believer.
In terms of non-cognitivism. Definitely.
Right.
Your second reason is, I am an atheist because all the world's religions have failed to demonstrate that they are ways to a God. Why don't you explain exactly what you mean by ways to a God here?
Okay, granting that we can define a God, just saying, okay, well, let's give these religions a chance to be special. Let's give them a chance to show that somehow they are unique from one or several are unique from the rest, and that there is really some truth that's demonstrable that can be seen in these religions. What I'm doing is I'm just comparing the religions to say, is there anyone that literally grabs your attention and says, hey, this must be have some kernel of above and beyond truth to it. Well, there are none. If you look at every world religion, you find that they are all basically pathetic attempts to explain the unknown. They are man's attempts to instill hope and purpose and to find answers to what they did not understand. I can take Zoroastrianism, I can take Christianity, I can take Hinduism, Islam, Shintoism, or you name it, and I do not find anything remarkable about those systems of thought that suggests a divine origin. There's nothing there that implies supernatural, anything that is truly supernatural. Even if I grant that there are some virtues, and of course there are, when religion is applied, there can be virtues, that is. Sometimes there aren't. But
there can be.
A moral
issue. More of a moral issue, so it's not really in
right.
our topic. But
right, no, I'm...
We should go again and skip that one, maybe.
But I think it's really interesting the way you say ways to a God. It seems like religions basically tell you what you want in this with this religion is to go be with this God, but they don't really give us much in ways of why we want to be with this God in the first place.
Well, of course they're limited at that, but my point being there was, it's just that none of them are remarkable. You look at them, and it's just another attempt to explain the world. And there's a dime a dozen out there. There's just many of them. But what I meant about no, I'm not saying that any religion teaches morality. It doesn't. But sometimes they end up being used like that, but it's not to the credit. It's not to the credit of the religion. That's all.
I understand. And about this point, I would say that in terms of apologetics, pretty much 99% of all classical arguments don't apply to any specific religion at all. They're used by Christians or Islamists, but they really could apply to any
theistic
belief at all. And, you know, the argument from design, the argument from...
Right, and that's the kind of, to me, demonstrates the nebulousness of the position. When you look at an argument that'll go any which way, there's usually something missing
that
sort of discredits this.
Your third point is, I'm an atheist because all I know is the natural world. And this is a great argument. Because you've got a Christian theologian, you know, on his debate to pulpit or whatever, talking about, for example, presuppositionalism. And saying, yeah, but everything you know depends on a supernatural God, and everything you do is based on the existence of a supernatural God. And then you look at the situation. The guy's material, his thoughts are material. In his argument, he's talking about something that's material. He's talking about material things. And he's saying that this justifies the existence of something not material.
Exactly. What a horrendous fallacious.
all that he's doing is proving that something has a material cause. Like there's nothing in anything that a theologian can say, or anyone else, that could somehow be supernatural to begin with.
Just exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. And this gets back to what people email me and try to take me to task on design and designer and the cosmological quibbles. But let me tell you what it gets back to. Just back to this point. What we have is what we know exists is matter. We have the theists in this other camp who are saying, no, there has to be matter plus spirit. Spirit which we can't define, which we have no experience with, which we do not know exists. They want to tell us that all of the natural, the real world, is explained based on a ghost that we cannot see, that we cannot define, that we cannot test, or in any way validate. No, why don't I just stop with the natural world? We're all theist or atheist going to get to I don't knows at some point. Why don't we just stop with what we know exists? Why don't we just stop and explain things on a naturalistic premise which follows, which flows with what we understand about the world? Rather than jump to the idea that a spirit who had no beginning and will have no end and is everywhere and yet nowhere at the same time, that this spirit created us somehow.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's...
It sounds like some kind of freaky, absurdist play or something. Mm-hmm. Everywhere and nowhere at the same time.
It is. That is. And preachers affirm so. You know, God is everywhere, yet nowhere at all, and in one particular place or another. And of course, what they're defining is in so doing, is they're removing all limits from reality and making their deity no different than any other being that doesn't exist.
I think,
and of course, they don't exist.
That kind of a modern thing that ministers do. I mean, they didn't used to have to say stuff like that.
Because
before they had airplanes, you know, they could just put God up in the top of the tree where nobody can reach.
Exactly. He's in the clouds, and then when the plane was discovered, he moved to the stars. And now that we're getting out beyond the planet, he's in another dimension. And you're hearing a lot about spiritual dimensions these days, because and it's a God.
Never mentioned that until people knew what a dimension was.
Right. It was God was very practically nothing before that, and then now he's just totally further and further off, and that's God of the gaps reasoning. We're as Epicurus said, God exists in the gaps of our knowledge of the world. The more we learn, the smaller God's living room gets, and it's sad, and that's one of the things that convinced me as a doubting minister that there was no way I could harmonize, that the God living room is just getting too small to live in.
It's strange that they push God further away, but as far as Christianity goes, Jesus is getting smaller and smaller because, you know, he's everybody's little buddy that kind of is their own personal little angel on their shoulder.
that's the whole point of religion. That's people feel comforted. People feel entreated. And that's the heart and soul of, you know, evidence is window dressing. Evidence is just there to make them think they're doing well in a skeptical modern culture. But actually, you know, it's all about a personal experience. And there are still a few honest theologians out there that will tell you that, just not many.
Mm-hmm. And to close on this topic, what I would say is your example of intelligent design was great. Because if you look at these two parts, intelligence and design, the notion of intelligence is material. We know it as a property of material brain.
Of course.
We observe only material intelligences. If you look at design, design is material. We observe the property of people who have intelligence, who are able to do things materially. We don't know of any supernatural design. We don't even know what that means. Even if you posit a God, how do we know that it has intelligence or that it's able to design or what it would design? We don't know.
Right.
It's just an ad hoc rationalization.
Of course.
So I would say that definitely shows the power of the argument right there.
Uh-huh.
All right. Your fourth point is, I am an atheist because being so enables me to make honest decisions. Oh, Here we go. We have objective morals here. That's cool. Honest decisions about things in the world around me. that's nice and a nice moral virtue.
Yes, it is. there is such a thing. Despite
there
what some,
you go. Thank
there
you
is such a thing. Yes. Oh, no, I'm in your camp on that one, definitely. The problem was that I wanted to be honest with myself. I got into the ministry wanting to be honest with what the answers of the universe, where they lied, what it all meant. Well, the same desire led me out of the ministry. And forced me to walk away from the things I once believed. Atheism, you see, I'm not committed to atheism. I'm not committed. Atheism is not, it's not a positive sort of position.
Exactly.
It's a position that just frees up what already exists in the intellectual faculties.
Exactly.
We're totally on the same track here.
Definitely.
On the same page. Exactly.
Definitely. I can look at the world and draw conclusions as I see fit. I can disagree. I'm not afraid of being burned by an angry father who shakes his finger at me. No, I can be honest with myself and draw those conclusions that I find necessary. And that's the heart and soul of atheism. Atheism's got to be applied. Atheism has got to be understood. It's not as though we have a church of churchless people, as though we are committed to some doctrine. We're not. We stand on a default understanding of nature, which is fundamentally what people should see and do.
We have someone here, folks, who is morally autonomous. What do you know about that?
Yeah, I really agree. It's very appropriate since we're starting our war on relativism.
Yes, it is. I'm in that fight, too, with you. I totally...
Joe Holman has declared.
Yes, I'm declared.
Joining war on relativism. Thank you.
Definitely.
Great support. You're going to have to add that to your...
Yes, as a matter of fact, I will.
No, I was talking to Ali.
You should add
to your post. Joe Holman supports us.
If you have an article, boy, I'd be happy to post it.
Well, I will holler at you. I'm behind on some of these articles, but I've got to update the site, too, so have patience with me, but I'll get to it.
Joe Holman says, I'm in.
Yes, I'm in the fight with you. You can put that up there.
Cool. One of the examples of lack of honesty that you give there is the problem of evil, basically.
Yes.
Well, not necessarily, but you say that the Christian must accept the Bible atrocities as just and right action from a just and right God. And that's a good point, and it is hypocrisy, but to this I would also add that Christians, like everyone else, seek to end atrocities and disasters in reality. But on the other hand, they also have to admit that these things happen because of the creation of a just God. So there's an equally powerful lack of honesty in that regard also.
Definitely. And when dealing with stuff like this, it's important to realize that, a theist is committed to too much. A theist, particularly the Bible believer, is committed to upholding all of those teachings that are in there. And when it comes to reality and things around, you have to face what's called in seminary the ultimate will of God, which is the things that he allows to happen. Some call it the providential will of God. Why was a person raped? Why was a person murdered? God had the power to prevent this, and obviously, according to his word, his revealed word, if that indeed is it, then he had every reason to stop it, because it wasn't according to his will. Yet, there is another sense of will, quote-unquote, where the believer has to face whatever comes his way. He has to take the world around him as he sees it, even though it doesn't logically work with his paradigm. It doesn't work with his scheme. And this
thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks for people, paraplegics, and thanks for cancer and the diphtheria germ that kills children and horrible things that he could have prevented in a mere thought.
So if we all have to face the world and what happens in it, why bother putting a God in there anyway?
Of course. So that becomes a question. I can explain the world on material. I don't need to go to the supernatural because evolution predicts all of the things that we've discussed. So we don't even need to do that.
Well, it's a much less cruel world. I mean, we know that there's cruelty in the world, but if a God wills these rapes, then it's a much crueler universe, it seems.
Yes. And we, you know, and then this, let me tell you guys, when I look up at the stars, I did, when I was doubting and losing faith, I looked up at the stars and I tried to see design in it, but you know what, the more I learned about the material world and the natural sciences, this thing doesn't even look designed. I mean, unless you really don't understand a lot about the world, when you understand a lot about them, it doesn't even look designed. Stars, we understand the origin of stars, we understand the origin of elements, on the periodic table, we understand, elemental products on Earth, the formation of salt. I mean, yada, 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 you name it. We have explanations that fit that. And it got to where I couldn't even look up at the stars and pray for faith anymore without doubting everything around me. And so even in, you know, people talk about nature being the evidence of God. You know, that only works if you are already committed to believing that.
Yeah.
To a thinker, the evidence, the answers present themselves on a more subtle level. And to a doubter, you run into this problem. You look around and you find that the world does not conform to the theistic expectation in any way. Matter of fact, this universe, I said it in my deconversion story on the site there, if this universe is designed by a deity, he's done a perfect job at making it totally undetectable, because there's nothing but mass confusion. We could sit here all day naming atrocities and horrible things, or otherwise things that do not work with the benevolent God idea. And so this we're only beginning. Don't even get me started. This would be a whole other topic.
You could have done such a better job on my teeth.
or my feet or in my back, you know.
Yeah.
I got migraine headaches. If you'll take them away, then I'd appreciate it. I doubt it. I would pray and all, but with the atheism thing, I've tried that. It didn't work.
Okay, I guess we won't have time to go through all of these points because we only have 4 minutes left. But you can talk about this one here because I think this is an important one. It's I'm an atheist because faith is a flawed system to live by. And I think there's this expectation in the debate that eventually the Christian will go to the point of just saying, well, that's what I believe in. That's my faith, and you can't take it away. And that's what it is. And
right.
I think at this point, it's important to note, even if you decide not to continue the debate, it's still important to note that this is not the end. Of the epistemological issue, because faith in itself is not a good way of looking at the world. It's
no.
A very bad way of looking at the world, and it's a
very detrimental.
Yeah, and the other thing is, it's also a way that is not. I think you agree with me on this. Faith is not how most people, even Christians, act in most other areas of life. You know, I think most
right.
people who go to buy a car, and this is the same argument that I use against people who say that morality is relative, say, no, that's not how you act in reality. When you go buy a car, you take into account a number of criteria, such as the price, the size, what do you want to do with it.
Practical concerns.
Exactly.
Right. Totally material things.
Exactly. And I think this applies to pretty much most areas.
Definitely. Faith just causes, what it does is it causes division, it causes confusion, it offers nothing in return, and it's just a convenient dodge. And then, you know, I always get this, and I know y'all get this too, it's, well, you have faith in atheism. No, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have faith that the sun comes up. I know by observation that the sun comes up, and will tomorrow.
And how many times can we say that?
Well, we don't have faith that the sun comes up. It's an
right.
inductive assumption based
right.
on our observation.
Right. Which is my point.
Well,
and
it's based on two things. It's based on our observations and induction on our observations, and it's also based on the fact of physics.
Of course, right. And that's so, but that's just an example I've often used. People, well, you know, you've got to have faith. Well, no, that's what you've been taught. That's not what it is, or what should be.
Well,
and so
the sun doesn't come up.
Yeah.
you probably have flown off into space by then.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. If faith, if we need to have faith, then about what? I mean, about what are we supposed to have faith in? Why? How can we possibly single out this one thing from everything else? If everything is material, how can one epistemology suddenly be true when it's false in any other area? Do you understand?
This was just what I said when I talked about creating confusion. And what it does is it creates mass confusion, because now there's no way to distinguish between one or the other as far as credibility is concerned. You have the Church of Christ scientists saying medication, God led him, by faith he's not to use medication. Then you've got the Baptist who says this, and a Pentecostal who says this, and what you have is conflicting views. You have a framework where there is not only no certainty, but there's the complete absence of even assurance. There's just your hope and your estimation of the character of a being who does nothing.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we have very little time left, but I also wanted to mention another major problem with faith is that, by definition, it's not except persuasion or argument. That's kind of the whole point.
Exactly.
That means that the only way to change people's minds is by force, coercion, and threats, and duty, and
right,
all the things that
of course
undesirable in a social setting.
Can I say one thing before we go?
You have a few seconds. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, one of the reasons was, and I invite everybody to check it out, ministerturnsatheist.org, is that I am an atheist because I don't want to play the guessing game. And that's one of the big reasons. I'm tired of guessing on what is and what is not the will of God. There's a whole section on that. Anyway, I thank you guys for having
me
on.
Thank you very much, Joe Holman, for being on the show.
Yeah, we really enjoyed
Delighted.
Talking to you. Thanks a lot.
That was a great show.
Yeah. Well, thank you, guys. I enjoyed it. I do.
Yeah. Why don't you quickly give our coordinates?
All right, everyone. Well, again, our website is hellboundalley.com, and you can email me at ally@hellboundalley.com.
So tomorrow on the live show, we have Aaron Kinney, who's been on the show many times, of course, to discuss his appearance on Matt Slick's radio program, and also about his jury duty. He managed to get out of jury duty. And our show next week is The State of Europe with Per Bylund. That should be very interesting. We have many different topics on the plate for this great thinker. So goodbye, everyone. See you next week.
Ciao.